Joshua 23, verses 11 through 13. Take good heed, therefore, unto yourselves that ye love the Lord your God. Else, if ye do in any wise go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you, know for certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you, but they shall be snares and traps unto you, and scourges in your sides, and thorns in your eyes, until ye perish from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you. You may be seated. This is a very sombering lesson. This is a Pentecostal message. I don't know what else to do for Pentecost except to bring a message like this. And it affected when I was born. This is what it's going to be talking about. What happened when I was born? But he's talking about Israel, and he says, I want you to love me. Don't go back and cleave to the remnant of these other people, these that remain among you, and make marriages with them, and go into them, and they to you. You know for a certainty, so you be sure of this fact. If you do that, God will no more drive out these nations from before you. And they are going to be snares, traps, scourges, and thorns in your eyes. And you're going to perish off the good land that God sent you. Are these descendants of these people still living in the world today? We got the covenant people of God, Israel, and their enemy, who are the Canaanites. If the Israelites married any of the remnant of the nations that used to occupy the land that they now live in, they would become snares, traps, scourges, and thorns to them. There's not one good thing said about any Canaanite in the Bible. They were cursed. Who are they? They are not called Canaanites today. But first, a little explanation of what happened in my life. When I was a young man, it seems like a long time ago. Time goes fast. I was a Judeo-Christian. I didn't even know I was a Judeo-Christian. Not knowing very much of what was in the Bible, and what was happening right before my eyes in the world. I did one thing right. I decided to read the Bible from one cover to the other cover once a month. So once a month, I would read the entire Bible. I believe that would give me a view of what the Bible was about. It did. And it changed my life forever. After reading the Bible through for 6 times in 6 months, I noticed something that was hard for me to digest. I noticed it was that the Jews were constantly attempting, and in many cases succeeding, in murdering Jesus Christ and many of his followers. What a shock. The people who the Protestant church that I belonged to had told me was the covenant people of God were the ones who had hatred and murdered the followers of Jesus Christ. Now that's a shock. When you learn that, that is an absolute shock. This led me to the book of John in verses like 8:44. Ye are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. Who was this that Jesus was talking to? it greatly disturbed me. Up to this time is why anyone would hate Jesus. You ever think about that? What did he do to make anyone mad enough to kill him and his followers? He was kind, healed people, and offered himself as a sacrifice for the sins of the world. But it was the message that he taught. What message was that? It was the covenant message. If you were a mixed-breed person, would you like the covenant message? The whole world is fast becoming a mongrelized world. You ever think about that? With all races living in almost every civilized country in the world. At the airport, I recognize that. I hear people of different languages talking all the time. Miscegenation and diversity is counted as one of the world's greatest achievements instead of one of the world's worst events. We are rapidly approaching the end times. May the God of Israel once again show the world who he truly loves. I'm going to talk about World War II. I never got to study it in high school. We ran out of time. We spent so much time on the explorers. We got up to World War II and ran out of time. That was it. But almost every history book will inform the reader that World War II began 2 days after Germany invaded Poland. Germany invaded Poland to enable the Germans who lived there to have an opportunity to get out of the country. And 2 days later, September the 3rd, 1939, Britain and France declared war against Germany. In my last sermon, it was taught that the Jews of the world declared war against Germany 6 years earlier. This was a bit of information that I never heard of before. The Jews of the entire world declared war on Germany in 1933. World War II began, most historians say, not on this date, but not until 1939. Well, did it start in 1933 or did it start in 1939? The World Jewish Congress and the Jewish Federation waged an economic war against Germany, and Jews who were living all over the world joined together to boycott German goods. This article appeared on March 24, 1933. Hitler was just elected to office. I showed this newspaper last week at the end of the message. It's a British newspaper. At the very top, you can see the date, Friday, March 24, 1933. The paper cost 1 cent. One penny. Inflation has certainly gone. Judea declares war on Germany, and under the headline, Jews of All the World Unite in Action. I saw the article on the right. Mr. McDonald explains his tour. Peace can be kept in Europe. That was a big flop, wasn't it? On the left side, boycott of German goods. Mass demonstrations in many districts. Dramatic action. And it talks about the boycott that the Jews put on the Germans. I never heard of this. Of course, I wasn't born yet. But my parents were alive. But see, there was no TV. There was no internet. No phones like it is now. It would take a long time to get any information. I remember doing the book reports, trying to find a book in the library. Now you just get it right on. You get instant information. My first point, if the Jews had declared war on Germany, and they did 6 years before the date that most historians say the war started, what was wrong with Germany putting them, their self-mandated enemy, into concentration camps? Didn't we, the United States of America, do the same to Japanese residents in the same war? Now I've got a picture. Look at that. At the top, this is a sign on top of a car. The top of the sign. Judea declares war on Germany. Boycott all German goods. I guess, I don't know what he was doing, but it shows you that they had declared war. How successful were they? That'll be in the next message. Then I got another one. Look at this one. For humanity's sake. That's an interesting choice of words, isn't it? Boycott German industry. Don't buy German goods. Do you see who put this out? Look up at the upper left-hand corner. What do you see in the upper left-hand corner? You see a six-pointed star? It's the Jewish war veterans of the United States. And down at the bottom, it says, Jewish war veterans of the United States. International Jewry formally declared its holy war against Germany long before Hitler began restricting the rights of German Jews. Jewry's war declaration against Germany was issued by Samuel Untermyer. Oh, I've heard that name before. Samuel Untermyer. Do you remember what I told about him? Of the World Jewish Federation, who said in the New York Times, that's the newspaper, August 7th, 1933, here's what he said, that it would be of economic boycott that will undermine the Hitler regime and bring the German people to their senses by destroying their export trade on which their very existence depends, unquote. They're at war with Germany. And I wasn't even born yet. I got another one. The Toronto Evening Telegram, February 26, 1940. So that is 7 years after Untermyer's speech. It's by a rabbi, and I won't even say his name because it's too long, and I'll pronounce it wrong, but you don't have to know who he is. He was speaking at the World Jewish Congress, telling a Canadian audience that the World Jewish Congress has been at war with Germany for 7 years. The Jewish desire for war was admitted to by Rabbi Felix Mendelssohn in the Chicago Synodal of October 8, 1942, where he states, the Second World War is being fought for the defense of the fundamentals of Judaism. Wow, that's a shocker. Fought for the defense of the fundamentals of Judaism? I'm so glad I didn't fight in that war. But I know a lot of people who did fight in that war. The second thing, if the Germans had most of their men fighting in the war, and they did, who was employed in their industries? In America, we had so many soldiers fighting. That's where the women and the older men filled the capacity in industry. In Germany, it was their women, children, older people, Germany, along with people in the concentration camps. and Auschwitz. The people were employed by IG Farben Chemical Company. If it were a death camp, how did people live there for over 4 years and survive? Where is Auschwitz? Now, don't show the map yet. Where is Auschwitz? There's Berlin, there's Germany. It's in Poland. It's way down here. Auschwitz is in southern Poland. It's not in Germany at all. It's in Poland. In fact, I've got another map. This is put out by the propaganda of the Holocaust, but it's a good map. Look at that. All these dots, these are camps solely set up for the murder of Jews. There's Auschwitz. There's six of them. But they're all in the country of Poland. And the yellow dots are other camps in which Jews and non-Jews were put to forced labor, so they're working, starved, tortured, and murdered. These are all the concentration camps. Italy, France, Germany, Poland. Notice that all the camps that were set up solely for the murder of Jews was in the country of Poland. You can't see it very well on the map, but there's Auschwitz, and all these are around here in Poland. They say there were six camps that were set up solely for the murder of who? Jews. If 6 million Jews were gassed in these six concentration camps, they had to average almost 640 Jewish gassings a day in each of the six camps for 4 years. That's quite a number. Now, the third thing. If it is true the 6 million Jews were murdered at the German concentration camps, how were there so many survivors? It's a death camp. How did anybody get out alive? In 1941... how many Jews were living in Europe? 7 million. Add 2 million to it, 9 million were living in Europe. By May 1945, the Nazis had murdered how many of them? 6 million. And 1.5 million of these were children. So 9 take away 6 is 3. That's 2/3 of all the Jews who were living in Europe were gassed to death. That would mean there's 3 million Jews left in Europe, but there was a war going on, right? And some of them are soldiers. Some Jews even fought for Germany. Some Jews fought for Russia. That would mean there are 3 million Jews left. How many Jews died from disease, bombs, and bullets, as well as natural causes? Anybody die of a natural cause? There were Jewish soldiers as well as civilians. I would say 2 million died. That would leave how many in Europe? 1 million. Then how many Jewish people fled to other countries? I'd say 1 million. That means how many Jewish people were in Europe at the end of the Second World War? None. Oh, look at the next one. This is very good. Whoa. This is at Auschwitz. The top one, up in the top right, 1948 is when that plaque was put up. Supporting the creation of Israel, Auschwitz displays a memorial that mourns how many people died. Can you read it up there? 4 million. Now, they said it was 6 million. Now it's 4 million people suffered and died here at the hands of the Nazi murderers between the years 1940 and 1945. 4 million people. Then the year 1989, the USSR releases captured death registry volumes. Auschwitz quickly revised the number. And here it says here, forever let this place be a cry of despair and a warning to, again, humanity. Humanity is warned. Where the Nazis murdered about 1.5 million men, women, and children, mainly Jews, from various countries of Europe. Auschwitz-Birkenau, 1940-1945. 2.5 million people mistake. Ernest Sundel and others are in prison for only questioning the Nazi number of 6 million. Notice how the plagues have decreased, how the plaques have decreased the number of Jews who were gassed at Auschwitz from 6 million to 4 million. Now it's 1.5 million. They don't tell you about the plaque. They keep saying 6 million. Oh, but that's not all. The next one. Oh, they reduced it again. Poland lowers Auschwitz toll. Auschwitz deaths reduced to 1 million. 1/6 of the original amount. Now, here's something interesting. When I first got into this, we didn't have the internet. So I went to downtown Cincinnati library, and I got this very page. I later went back to get the book, and the book was gone. So I swiped the book. Look at that. It's the Atlas, the World Atlas. And it says right here, the estimate for Jews in the above table is for 1933. That's the year they declared war on Germany. And is by the American Jewish Committee. You probably don't know about Jews if you've been around them. But the Jews keep track of how many people they have. They know exactly how many people they have at any time in the world. And they give up the top Roman Catholics, Orthodox Catholics, and Protestants in North America, South America, Europe, Asia, Africa, Oceania, the total. The Jews by the world of country. The Jewish population, 1930, Europe had 9.4 million people. Africa, Asia, Australia, and America had 4.6 million. How many Jews were in Germany in 1933? 510,000. How many people were killed at the concentration camp? Poland, 3,028,837 Jews. Poland was the biggest Jewish, had the most Jews in their country outside the United States. Poland had more than Russia. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Then I got, this is from the Holocaust deal. They put the percentage of people that were killed. The source is what, the Encyclopedia of the Holocaust? But once you see what they said about Poland, they said how many people were killed? 3 million. They said it's 90.9% of the people. Does anybody remember what the Atlas said, how many Jews lived in Poland in 1933? 3,028,000 Jews. That's higher than 90%. That's almost, that's 99% of the people. Don't believe these numbers. All right, the next would be the cartoon. I thought this was pretty good. And I don't believe all of this. It says only 5.5 million Jews lived in all of pre-war Europe. I don't think it was 5.5 million. It was 9.5 million lived in all of Europe. But they got a lot of good stuff here. Lampshades of human skin, soap of human fat, photos of stacked bodies were all propaganda hoaxes. That's true. You probably heard about the lampshades and everything. Most deaths in German camps came in the last 90 days of war, typhus and starvation due to Allied saturation bombing. That was true. American prison incinerators consume one body in 8 hours. Yet two at Auschwitz supposedly burned 25,000 a day. Incredible. No German documents were ever found mentioning any plans to exterminate Jews. No mass graves were ever found. No piles of human ashes were ever found. And over here, the Jews are saying, hurry, call Hollywood for more movies on the Holocaust, for TV shows in schools. Hurry, publish survivors' reports. Hurry, pass laws against anti-Holocaust literature.
How many soldiers have the United States lost in death by war since its founding over 200 years ago? How many U.S. soldiers were killed? Now, tomorrow was what? Memorial Day? Old Decoration Day? That's remembering dead soldiers. How many soldiers have died in all the wars in the United States has fought in its entire history? Let's hear a number. You're exactly right. It's 1.5 million people. But which war was the most bloody? Civil War. Anybody got killed was just about American, right? If you take away the Civil War, how many people were killed in wars? About 750,000. It's about the same number that was killed in the Civil War. That's amazing. What a bloody war. Maybe you, when you see the movie again, Inherit the Wind, you get an idea of the death and destruction, because there is pretty evenly divided between the two sides of the people killed. It was bloody. Now let's put that up there. Look at that. Total American deaths by war. American Civil War, 750,000. World War II was the next biggest, 405,000. World War I was what, 116,000? Then Vietnam, Korea, American Revolution, War of 1812, and so forth. And there's a whole bunch of little wars that they didn't put up there, but that's basically what it is. If you compare that to the number of Jewish people who were killed in the gas chambers in Poland, there were four times as many Jews killed in the gas chambers at Auschwitz that America has lost in every single war it's fought in over 200 years. Now, the fourth thing I'm going to say, I think is important. What does God's law say about this? God's law states that it's a sin to blame a people for something that they did not do. Did you ever get blamed for something you didn't do? I have. It's a small thing, but it's very bad. If a person is innocent of doing something, is it okay for a Christian to blame him? The question is, did the Nazis actually execute by the gas chambers up to 6 million Jews? Now, I looked up John Rushdoony, who wrote this huge book, The Institute of Biblical Law. And I got a quote from him. The evils were all too great, he said. Here's a quote from Rushdoony. Even greater is the evil of bearing false witness concerning them, because that false witness will produce an even more vicious reality in the next upheaval. Men are now reconciled to a world where millions are murdered or said to be murdered. What will be required in the way of action and propaganda next time? Unquote. That's what Rushdoony says. Then he goes on and talks about, in 1941, a man by the name of Theodore Kaufman. Anybody hear of Theodore Kaufman? Jim's heard of him. He said in his popular Jewish book, his book was, Germany must perish. Is right. Germany must perish. He said in his book that all Germans must be totally sterilized, which would forever eliminate the German nation forever. I never heard of this book. What did the Germans do to deserve this kind of punishment? It's the entire elimination of the tribe of Judah. I'm going to talk about that next week. Now, we got a picture of him, I believe, with his book. No picture of him with his book? Okay. You most likely never heard of Theodor Kaufman and his dreams of genocide. It was a Jew, Kaufman was a Jew, not a German, who in 1941 proposed a final solution to kill all German Gentiles. Jews throughout the world often screamed that National Socialist Germany was intent on doing what? Ruling the world. The Jewish-controlled United States press collectively referred to Germans as warlike barbarians, and they used the word Huns, H-U-N-S. The Jew Theodor Kaufman accused Germans of pursuing a policy of world dominion and therefore advocated their complete annihilation and the territorial dissection of their nation. Kaufman chillingly wrote, this is what I got Kaufman's quote. It says, "For it must be patent by now that while all the Germans may not approve of the means of being employed by the Nazis in achieving German world dominion, they are practically unanimous in agreeing that it was the goal must now and in the future be definitely achieved by Germany. Were the German nations to win this war, not one German would hesitate laying claim to a share in the loot. Yet the Viet will on no account erase their desire to conquer and rule the world. There's only one way to frustrate such a desire. The goal of world dominion must be removed from the reach of the German. And the only way to accomplish that is to remove the German from the world." And it's still happening. We're blaming the wrong people, aren't we? When we say the Arabs are responsible for bringing down the Twin Towers and for bringing down especially Building 7 in New York City, and destroying part of the Pentagon building in Washington, D.C.? Are we blaming the wrong person for the 26 murders in Sandy Hook? We didn't see any evidence of the murders. The fifth point I'm going to make, if the Jews declared war against Germany, they said they were going to completely destroy the German people. My question is, did they? Cham Weisman, the late chairman of the World Zionist Organization and first president of Israel, made clear the genocidal Jewish intention to destroy Germany. In a letter to British Prime Minister Winston Churchill dated September 10, 1941, Weisman spoke about how the Jews of the United States pulled the nation into the First World War. And he promised they could do it again, giving that Britain fulfilled Zionist demands regarding Palestine. Weissman wrote, here it is, "It has been routinely acknowledged by British statesmen that it was the Jews who in the last war effectively helped to tip the scales in America in favor of Great Britain. They are keen to do it again and may do it again." In a speech on December 3rd, 1942, now we're getting interesting. I was a little baby, less than 3 weeks old, when this speech was given. 3-week-old baby. Weissman stated, quote, "We are not denying and are not afraid to confess that this war is our war, Jewish war, and that it is waged for the liberation of Jewry.
Stronger than all fronts together is our front, that of jewelry. We are not only giving this war our financial support, on which the entire war production is based. We are not only providing our full propaganda power, which is the moral energy that keeps this war going. The guarantee of victory is predominantly based on weakening the enemy forces, on destroying them in their own country within this resistance. We are the Trojan horses and the enemy's fortress. They were in every country. Thousands of Jews living in Europe constitute the principal factor in the destruction of our enemy. There our front is a fact and the most valuable aid for victory, unquote. Whoa. That was said when I was 3 weeks old. I'm just finding out about it. Now here's another guy, a Russian, and I'm not going to pronounce his name. Edinburgh, his middle name I'm going to leave alone. He wrote a leaflet entitled Kill. He's quite a writer. Edinburgh incited the simple Russian soldier to treat the Germans as what? Subhuman. Here's his final paragraph. The Germans are not human beings. From now on, the word German is the most horrible curse. Well, who was cursed? He was. See, everything's twisted around. Evil's good, good's evil. From now on, the word German strikes us to the quick. We have nothing to discuss. We will not get excited. We will kill. If you have not killed at least one German a day, you have wasted that day. If you cannot kill a German with a bullet, then kill him with your bayonet. If your part of the front is quiet and there's no fighting, then kill a German in the meantime. If you have already killed a German, then kill another one. There's nothing more amusing to us than a heap of German corpses. Don't count the days. Don't count the kilometers. Count only one thing. The number of Germans you have killed. Kill the Germans. Kill the Germans. Kill. This is typical of the steady diet of pathological hate fed to millions of Soviet troops by this Jew, safely ensconced from the front. But it wasn't only the ordinary German soldier Edinburgh was talking about. He was accused of the very atrocities the communists were committing themselves. Edinburgh's incendiary writings were, in fact, a prime motivating factor in the orgy of murder and rape against the civilian population that took place as Soviet troops rampaged into the heart of Europe. Appealing to the lowest, most subhuman instincts of the Bolshevik's horde, he recounted his genocidal message. Get this. Kill. Kill. In the German race, there is nothing but evil. Not one among the living, not one among yet the unborn, but is evil. Follow the precepts of Comrade Stalin. Follow the precepts of Comrade Stalin? That's one question I asked when I was 10 years old in Sunday school class. Why did the United States help the communists fight against the Christian nation of Germany? Stamp out the fascist beast once and for all in its lair. Use force and break the racial pride of these German women. Break the racial pride of these German women. Take them, the women, as your lawful booty. Kill
as you storm onward, kill you gallant soldiers of the Red Army. The crowning achievement of Edinburgh's career came on December 22, 1944, when this hate-crazed fiend became the first person to mention the Kabbalistic figure of 6 million alleged Jewish victims of National Socialism, and then proceeded to introduce that figure into Soviet propaganda.
Oh.
Germany was the center for the Protestant Reformation. Martin Luther was one of its leaders. He taught the election of a sovereign God. And he wrote about the Jews and their lies. Germany had centuries of the stereotype of the Jew as a Christ killer, as an agent of the devil, and a practitioner of witchcraft. Why does it surprise anyone that in the early part of the 20th century, the Jew was singled out as a threat to establish the order of society? Germany's big mistake was letting them in their country. That's our big mistake, letting them in our country. What did the Jews do in the early part of church history? What does the Bible say about this period of time? What did I find as I read the Bible through each month? What did I find? I'm going to give you the first 12 chapters of the book of Acts. There are five major persecutions of the followers of him. The first persecution is Acts 4, verses 1 through 22. A man was born a cripple. He was placed near the gates of the Jerusalem temple every day to beg for alms. On a certain occasion, as Peter and John, that's two of the apostles of Christ, were about to enter, the poor, helpless creature stretched forth a dirty, bony arm, and he pleaded for a coin. Silver and gold have I none, said Peter. But such as I have, I give thee. In the name of Jesus Christ, rise up and walk. Instantly, he jumped to his feet, walking and leaping and praising God. The man was more than 40 years old and therefore been a familiar object on the streets of Jerusalem for years. When the report of this healing reached the treacherous Jews, you think they did? What a glorious thing. Or their minds got busier than ever. They began devising new plans for putting an end to everything that was being done in the name of Christ. Their first thought was to deny that the miracle had been performed. Then they realized that this was useless because the man was so well known. At that moment, he was rejoicing, praising God, testifying to his deliverance, and telling everybody what had happened. And we cannot deny it, mourned the Jews, who would have lied to discredit the story if it would have advanced their selfish purposes. The members of the Sanhedrin came together, and the little band of Christians were forced to appear before them. So they go before the Sanhedrin. A torrent of abuse was turned loose upon the trembling group, until finally Peter, filled with the Holy Spirit, became bold. That's God's promise. They'll fill you with the Holy Spirit. As spokesman for the group, he made it clear that Christians proposed to obey God rather than man. Had it not been that the mobs were at the time favorably towards the apostles because of the miracle that had been performed, the Jewish leaders would have no doubt put the entire body of believers to death. So I read that. Then I go to Acts chapter 5. Second persecution. More signs and wonders were wrought among the people by the apostles. All manner of diseases were healed. But the Jews could see no good in any of this relief of human suffering because it did not come through their medical doctors. Nothing's changed, has it? You've been healed? How did you heal? They're healed. You didn't take the chemicals. You had no chemo, no drugs. You were healed. That guy's a quack. The Jewish leaders agreed to the use of physical weapons in their attempt to destroy spiritual power. All the same as Jewish communists are doing today in trying to exterminate Christianity by killing Christians. The Jews, quote, laid hands on the apostles and put them in the common prison. They put them in prison. The Jews put the apostles in prison. But there was an angel of the Lord by night opened the prison doors and brought them forth. Next morning, when the Jewish Senate convened and messengers were sent to bring the apostles for trial, it was discovered, unknown to the jailers, they had escaped and were at that very hour preaching in the area of the temple. Jerusalem was in turmoil by this time. Had the officers dared, they would have killed the Christians without a legal trial. When the saints appeared before the tribunal, they were told that they had been previously warned not to teach in the name of Jesus. It's like the schools. You can't say Jesus. You can't pray in the name of Jesus. You have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood upon us, said the high priest. From this, it is evident that the apostles had been denouncing the Jews and charging them with the responsibility of Christ's death, which is exactly what I'm doing today. Here we find the leaders complaining about his blood being upon them, forgetting apparently their previous utterance, his blood be on us and our children. Finally, Peter dared to shout, the God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom you slew and hanged on a tree. We read that this cut them to the heart. Who was this upstart that he should have the audacity to rebuke them? I remember when I talked to the big Monsignor at Xavier University. Who are you talking to me? I was in class with the Pope. When they were almost ready to demand the lives of the apostles, Gamaliel, a tolerant member of the Sanhedrin, lifted a warning voice. If the new group was not of God, he declared, it would come to naught and fall by its own weight. But if it be of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest happily you are found even to be fighting against God. The result was, instead of killing the apostles, they were given another warning and a severe flogging. This form of punishment was cruel, brutal, cowardly, and unjust, but even though bitter and painful to the flesh, it caused rejoicing to the spirits of the faithful few. As the wounds healed, they rejoiced that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. I hope we're of the same mindset. The only way the Jews had of striking at Christ, whom they hated, was to injure his followers. They availed themselves of this opportunity. Then I went to Acts chapter 7. The blood of martyrs began flowing in the same year that the Lord ascended into heaven. The Jews' first victim after Christ was a man named Stephen, whose primary crime was belief in the deity of the Son of God. This is regarded as blasphemy. The story of the murder of Stephen by stoning is, after Christ's crucifixion, one of the saddest in all of the history of Christianity. When Stephen was arrested, he entered into a discussion of Israelitish history and closed by rebuking his judges for their hypocrisy. He declared that their devotion to God, the law, and the temple was hypocritical. He accused them of murdering the Son of God. Stephen laid bare the full measure of their guilt. The blood of the Son of God was upon their heads. They had ignored the miracles that testified of his deity. They had rejected the Pentecostal happening of the new believers. As he spoke, the Jewish leaders yelled and screamed to drown his words. They childishly stopped their ears with their fingers to avoid hearing the truth about themselves. Like serpents, they hissed their poison at the courageous Christian. They rushed upon him with one accord. In their madness, they dragged him outside the city, removing their outer garments as they ran. With stones, they pelted the body of the first Christian martyr until his life ebbed away. Saul of Tarsus watched as he held the coats of the murderers. The execution was illegal because the matter was not submitted to the Roman governor. The fourth persecution, Acts chapter 8. The first three persecutions were spontaneous and did not result from deliberate planning. But the spilling of Stephen's blood seemed to whet the appetite for more Christian suffering. The sight of blood, the appearance of the first deadly wound in the flesh of a believer, seemed to stir all the criminal instincts. You wonder what these stories in the New Testament is about, because the Judeo-Christian doesn't think about them at all. They came to the conclusion that an organized effort was imperative if this new faith was to be put down. The irony of this organized attempt on the part of the Jews to blot the cause of Christ out of existence was the fact that their own ringleader, Saul of Tarsus, got gloriously converted on the road to Damascus and became the greatest missionary and evangelist the world has ever known. But in later years, Paul never forgave himself, nor was he ever able to erase the memory of his early attacks upon the small group of Christians, which he came to love so dearly, and for which he finally sacrificed his own life. The fifth persecution is in Acts chapter 12. The next spasm of Jewish terror, the terrorists, mentioned in the early part of the book of Acts, was directed against Peter. Listen to what's said in the middle of the second century. Quote, "The blank were behind all persecutions of Christians." What word's missing there? The Jews. "They wandered through the country, everywhere hating and undermining the Christian faith." Give another quote. "The blank formed the breeding ground of all anti-Christian action." It was the Jews. Now, in Acts chapter 12, we read that Herod the king, who was a Jew, has James put to death by the sword. He beheaded him because of Jewish influences being brought to bear upon his throne. The ruler was the grandson of Herod the Great, who also was a Jew, who murdered the babes of Bethlehem after the birth of Christ, trying to kill him. No details are given in the scriptures about the killing of James, and yet underneath the simple statement, a deep anguish and sympathy may be felt. Then the next verse shows that the wicked king had planned to make away with Peter in the same way. Quote, "And because he saw, it pleased somebody." It pleased the Jews. he proceeded further to take Peter also. My conclusion. These stories go on and on. They're put in the Bible for a reason. They're put in the Bible to know that we have an enemy. If we don't follow God's law, this enemy is going to be a thorn right in our flesh and our eyes. We're not following God's laws at all. The Jew is raised up. Look at who's advising Obama. My gracious. Can't you see? Jews. What happens in the school? When you were school, it's different now than what it was then. Do they have devotion each morning like it did in my school? The Jews have been hating and killing Christians, starting with the murder of Jesus Christ, then Stephen, then the Apostle James, then the Apostle Peter, then the Apostle Paul, and virtually all the other 12 disciples except for John and Judas, who were exiled. John was exiled to Patmos for the rest of his life. The goal of the Jews in Jesus' time was the extermination of Christ. When he survived, they tried to destroy the Christians and Christianity. Over the past 2,000 years, their goals remained the same: to exterminate Christ, all Christians, and Christianity. It is true that the Jews throughout history have been thrown out of almost every country in Europe. But one must ask, why? A diligent study of history revealed that they were thrown out for a good reason. Each time they enter a country, they infiltrate. They attempt to take over the government. They practice usury. They bring degeneracy to the culture and are masters of deception. In the art world, what kind of art do they have? They do not build a culture. They're parasites a culture and destroy it. The Russian Bolshevik Revolution was Jewish. Virtually all the leaders of the communist revolutionaries were Jewish. The Jews slaughtered approximately 100 million Christians in Russia proper and the Ukraine. 100 million? The number's so large it doesn't have an impact on. There's only 300 and some million people in the United States, and it's roughly about half of them are white. Most of them were ethnic Germans by outright murder and planned famines. Hitler invaded Russia to try to save them. Did Germany try to eliminate all Jews, or was it the other way around? Did Jews try to eliminate all Germans? At the concentration camps, the Jewish press admits that Germans had, besides Jews, placed many millions of other people who were also imprisoned, enslaved, and murdered. These people included those with mental or physical disabilities, like Lily, homosexuals, Jehovah Witnesses. Why were JWs put in prison? Did you ever think about that? Trade unionists, political opponents, Poles and Soviet prisoners of war. Did you ever see a JW come out and say, I was in a concentration camp? How big were these concentration camps? If all these people, 6 million Jews of Europe were killed, and all these other millions of other people were in there, you had concentration camps, they held over 10 million people. These concentration camps must have been very large to house all these millions of non-Jews and almost all the Jews of Europe. Some of these camps must have had close to 1 million inhabitants. Well, how big is Greater Cincinnati? 500,000. It'd be twice as large as Greater Cincinnati. What very, very large cities these camps have had to be. It is the Christians who are the target. It is the Christians who are the target of Jewish hate. It's not the other way around. Never in the history of the world have Jews been victims. There have been times when they have reaped what they have sown because of their collective behavior in the nations in which they have lived. But they have never been victims, no matter how much the Jewish-controlled media portrays them that way. A diligent study of history proves conclusively that the Jews have never been the victims of persecution by Christians or by anyone else. There's a lot more to be discussed. This lesson will be continued. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel. Amen.